pulling from a different bucket, or however you want to frame it, but these needs are being met through skilled nursing, through private, from home care nursing. So by moving it into the ICS framework, in my brain, and I may not be the smartest one in this room, it's my assumption then that those costs would just shift over and would be moved from a different bucket. So I am interested to learn a little bit more about the fiscal note and why, you know, that year one in 25, I think it was, there's only a $1 million cost, and then the tails, it skyrockets up to $15 million per year. And is that assuming any cost savings or shifts or whatever, moving of cans around that would otherwise be already assumed in the system's cost? So.
So, thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Abler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just have to admit, I wasn't paying attention in the beginning when the bill came. I was reading the original bill, which actually has a number of pages and I think some really good content. And then I read the next page, which has only like one thing. Did I miss the explanation why? I thought there's some really good ideas there that make a lot of sense, but is there a reason that you aren't pursuing that?
Yeah, Mr. Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. This bill last year when it was carried, it had the transportation was in there, multiple providers being able to serve. There was a technology piece in there. Nursing was the only piece that really kind of fleshed out to be the most neutral topic and the topic that we could start to move forward. I think, and it certainly reduces the cost by one of the components. Now, I see this as an opportunity. Let's get the nursing piece in this year, and then we can have the same discussion. I get the same discussion about transportation and every other component that we pulled out of here and say make the same argument. But nursing is the most critical piece that we're hearing from our clients and residents that they need these services, and providers who are hesitant to get into ICS know that they don't get reimbursed for nursing, so they got to be careful on who they select to be able to provide services to. And so that's limiting choice and limiting access to some of this. So I agree with you. There's a lot of good components in the previous bill.
Senator Abler.
Mr. Chair, does it cost money to do monitoring technology, and does it cost money to have two or more providers in the same multifamily place? It's your bill. I just don't know why we're walking away from some of this. The future is in some of this, especially given there's no staff.
Right. You're on it, because I think you look at what did we learn from the commissioner was last year, 80% of services provided to folks, you know, that were receiving this are in a home, right? And now it's 90%, you know, especially elderly, right? It's like, so this actually helps enforce that. Home, you know, be at home kind of thing,
well,
right?
Not doesn't, anymore. Delete all. But is there a rescuing of any of this stuff?
Mr. Chair,
Josh.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Abler. I mean, part of the multiple provider piece too. It's just. It isn't quite there yet, because there's some language and there's some reasonable and appropriate concern from the Department of Health related to you can't have multiple licensed things in one building on one address. So if like assisted living was the licensed facility, we wouldn't want that building to be also licensed as an ICS. So there's some operational pieces that I think we can work through. But and last year, just for your recollection too, there was no fiscal note. We were never able to actually receive an official
Correct.
Fiscal note last year, so we made one up. And we're pretty darn close. I think we assumed about $12 million a year when all was said and done. But that's part of why we don't know how much cost, if any, there would have been for some of these other components.
I'll just go ahead. I'll just continue to vent.
Can I say Goathead? And it's the Senator Abel. I should be more formal here, right? You know.
I think that's perfect. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry,
I let you last your thought, but
no, that's all right. Forgotten better thoughts than this one. It's just really too bad that the level of oversight and regulation and the Department of Health, well, we can't do this, two things at one place, even though it might really help the people. Your organization has made a huge effort to try to pioneer in some of these ways. Mary T. abandoned it with this technology thing. I just cheer you on to get this done. And I don't understand why the people that are counting the beans don't see the merit in actually having people be served in a way that's creative and at the end isn't really going to cost anything more, even though it may have a cost, but it's not a real cost because you're going to spend more on doing ideas that are just not working. So I just, how many times have I given that speech, Mr. Chair?
I can count on, you know, through the years, multiple times. We always come back to that same question. If on one hand, because it leads to that, if I'm doing something that's going to save the system cost, then it should be, would make sense. And this is one that is going to save the system.
Can I ask the team there? I just don't want to walk away from all these good ideas. And we just, next year, and pretty soon. I've been here 25 years working on stuff next year that we still haven't gotten done. Don't abandon all this. If there's a way to kind of find out some stuff that just is reasonably free, that to allow technology within the same budget as the not technology budget, that should be free. Hello, departments, bean counters, that should be free. It actually helps people. And if they, you know, I'm here to help. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Should make Elise Bailey come down here and open up that checkbook, right, and say, hey, I'm kidding. I love
Mr.
this because this is the system stuff that we're talking about, you two, and it's just like, I hear it. Don't abandon it. It's like, how do we, I know you, I look at the out years and I'm going, right? But, you know, there's something to be said about this. So, Mr. Berg, final thoughts, you two, Senator Fate, Mr. Berg?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Abel, I mean, it reinforces the question or the conversation I think you all have been having, I've been trying to bring up, is where does the dynamic budgeting piece come into play here? I mean, I can talk till I'm blue in the face.
Dynamic.
Of, you know, I can provide ICS services at a rate that is a third of the cost of somebody sitting in a TCU or in a hospital, and it doesn't get built into a fiscal note of any kind. And so, yes, we could add nursing in here, and there may be some sort of fiscal note tied to it. But by doing it in this model, I can do it at a cheaper rate than a skilled nurse could do it, and it's certainly cheaper than somebody sitting in a TCU or in a hospital. So there are costs, yes, but we got to figure out a way that we capture
those. Dynamic. I've heard that. It just, don't you think, Senator Abel, you see, some fiscal people that are pretty smart to sit around it. I mean, let's take that premise, the dynamic. I don't know. Do you know anybody that sits on this committee that kind of does investment stuff?
Mr. Chair, let's call that a non-dynamic fiscal note because they don't do those. So if this definition could be the non-dynamic where they totally ignore the irrationality, that'd be the non-dynamic. And so we could have rational fiscal notes. I mean, Senator Hoffman, we've been doing this a long time and all the members here, like, we don't have enough money to hire enough people to take care of the people who need to be cared for. And some of them expire
in
their beds because they can't get the services to get out of bed in the morning. That's a true story.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Chair, you know what that costs? Nothing.
Mm-mm.
Nothing. And, so there we have to start to spend some time looking at things that globally make a lot of sense. And never mind the finesse of, you just know it's a good idea. And we don't get to do it because your target's not big enough and for the mythical cost. And then when the savings come, you know where they go, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, they go to the general fund,
right? So we spend $40 million to do something that we know is going to save money. And you know where the $80 million goes? At the end, it got saved. And we have to pay for the 40. And then the $80 million goes to somewhere.
And I think there was a person who said, you're going to have to pay for that again. Yeah, you're bringing up, this is just striking some really good conversation, Senator Fate. I'm glad you brought this bill forward. I'm glad you and Josh Berger are doing this because it really comes down to, I don't know, how much money last year did we send to the general fund that was underspent, right? Senator May Quaid, how much was that last year? Thank you very much. I mean, so we know that, right? And we know that this system, you know, and what you're proposing is, I appreciate this. This is actually good. Gets it on the table in this conversation. You want to just we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion, and then I don't want to lose this conversation. This is well worth it. So thank you, members. We'll do that. And then Senate File 1009 as amended, laid over for possible inclusion. Senator Fate, why don't you do Senate File 5203, and then we'll get Liam. Folks, unless you want to do that now, Mr. Monahan is going to explain the A23 amendment that will be in front of us And then that's exactly what we started the conversation on today was, you know, it's going to be a, it has to be a pure policy bill, but we need to make that decision here. So we'll go with Senator Fate, and then we'll go to Mr. Monahan after that. So Senator Fate, 5203, you got an A2 amendment, correct?
Correct, yes.
So Senator Fate moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye. I oppose, same sign. There it is. Senator Fate, now is it in the form that you want?
Yes.
This is a study of rates for community first services and supports.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Again, members, the SF5203 was worked on by the Minnesota First Provider Alliance, a trade association of PCA agencies and waiver service providers. This bill funds a one-time cost study for CFSS services so that the most updated cost analysis is used as the state negotiates the next SEIU contract. Over the last three biennia, PCA agencies have raised concerns that the rate increases proposed by DHS have failed to cover the increases in wages included in collective bargaining agreements ratified for the consumer-directed PCA programs. The legislature has taken action in an attempt to resolve the ongoing issue, and in 2021, the legislature passed legislation that would require providers to submit to DHS cost reports, the data from which could subsequently be used to support changes to the PCA rate framework and evaluate the cost of wages and benefits negotiated with SEIU. However, in the meantime, we are working to ensure that the next contract has the requisite funding associated with it. Senate File 5203 would require DHS to account for the full value of the wages and benefits negotiated for, including wage-related costs such as the employer's share of FICA taxes, Medicare taxes, state and federal unemployment taxes, and worker compensation premiums when calculating the rate increases needed to cover any increases in the next CBA. Further, it requires DHS to report to the legislature the formula used to determine the increase in reimbursement rates, individual budgets, grants, and allocations for each covered program, the CFSS agency provider model, and the traditional personal care assistance program. Historically, the PCA program has been one of the lowest reimbursed services with a reimbursement rate that is much lower than similar waiver services. The PCA program is a critical service that assists over 44,000 Minnesotans in their home and community. It is vital that we do not go another biennium with an underfunded reimbursement rate to ensure provider viability so Minnesotans who rely on these services continue to access them. And today I have Musab Khalif with the Minnesota First Provider Alliance here to testify in support of this bill.
Thank you, Senator Fate. Just looking to see there was a fiscal appropriate. I was getting it lined up. So thank you very much. Musab Khalif, welcome to, from Minnesota First Provider Alliance.
Thank you. Chair Hoffman and esteemed members of the committee. My name is Musab Khalif, and I'm a board member of the Minnesota First Provider Alliance. I'm here today to urge you to support Senate File 5203 as amended. This bill requires DHS to disclose how it calculates wages and reimbursement rate increases. This will help ensure that all known provider costs are accounted for, preventing underfunding CBA contracts in the future. To start, we want to express our deepest gratitude to the committee for investing in the PCA program last year and increasing our reimbursement rate. Your investment was a lifeline for traditional PCA agencies facing significant wage inflation. Sadly, agencies that serve clients through the consumer-directed program still face significant challenges. This is because the CBA wage increases have exceeded the reimbursement rate increases for nearly a decade. The gap between reimbursement rate increases and wage increases is due to the department's 70% assumption rule. The 70% assumption prescribes a 0.7% increase in reimbursement rates for every 1% increase in wages. This misguided application of the 70% assumption has resulted in an 88% increase in direct costs for these agencies. Even more concerning, when the PCA program transitions into CFSS, clients under the budget model will be considered employees of their caregivers. Therefore, CFSS budget model clients must use their service budget to cover the caregiver payroll taxes and benefits, resulting in them receiving fewer hours of care than they need. Again, this is because the service budget, i.e. the reimbursement rate, has not been increased sufficiently to cover the CBA wage, thus shifting the economic PCA economic burden from the PCA choice agencies to the CFSS budget model clients. What I'm saying to you is that the client's budget under the CFSS is going to be decreased because now we're shifting the cost over to the clients under CFSS. I mean, just think about that. That reason alone should justify the importance of passing this bill before us today. Lastly, we, the Provider Alliance, believe Senate File 5203 should cost the state minimally. This is basically because the kind of analysis required here is what we already do in the collective bargaining process. The bill simply requires the DHS staff to show their work and report it to the legislator. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer your questions. Sorry for my, it's Ramadan.
No, I never apologize. I mean, it's just all, it's what we do here. We just, you know, we're asking the question is what we're doing. Senator Abler.
Well, thank you. And so I was trying to figure this out, and I get it. So we spent, Senator Hoffman, a year trying to get a straight answer from the department about what does this money for? Does this cover everybody? Well, we fully funded the contract. And then they left us. So they, but there was a, there was this much for the contract, and then there was that much money they did allocated at the governor's office, which was woefully inadequate to handle the other PCA needs. And so we're simply asking here that they indeed show us the whole cost of the whole program. And Senator Hoffman, do you know what? Maybe I don't know. Maybe fiscal staff can advise. How much do you think it's going to cost to ask DHS to show their work? Would there be like some duplicating costs? You know, like, do they have to buy a new copier for this? And so they have to get a new office of work duplication. We'll have to set up, Mr. Chair. Do you think how that might go?
See, now you're encroaching on Senator Utke's question. So I, you know, I think I, as we lean back, I don't think it would be that much. I mean, to do a cost study, I'm sure they probably already have it now. But you know, I mean, let's. I wouldn't think it would be that much. You're looking at the big picture, right? The big system, Senator Abler. So.
Well, I was just. Well, Senator Hoffman, I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, I think it's going to be a lot of money because they have to have a meeting to talk about what format it might be in. That's going to involve some staff. They might need a lead person on this reporting thing that they'll have to have like a tenth of an FTE.
Senator.
And they'll have to talk to Minnit about the data
Senator
being
Fate,
transferred.
Senator Fate, can you reel him in on this? That's funny. Good. Senator Fate.
No, thank you, Senator Abler. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think once I mentioned this earlier, but the calculation has to happen already during the CBA process.
Yeah.
So this is just basically showing the work.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right, Senator Fate. And it's like, for as much as, you know, we're joking about, you know, having another meeting, maybe we should form a task force to create a working group and call it a blue ribbon panel or something, right? But I like this. Again, it goes on there. Anybody else? Since Senator Abler already asked what Senator Utke would have asked, I guess we'll wait to see what the cost is, and then we'll just assume it in. Does that sound favorable? Is that good?
Yeah. And I would just add, last year you guys invested $890 million into our program, right?
Yep.
I mean, just spending a couple of, you know, it shouldn't be that expensive to understand where that money goes, right? What's the impact of that money, right? And what is our state getting for that money?
Yeah, make it part of the full package next year. I get that. Well, maybe we get the language and move it to next year. I don't know. So with that, Senate File 5203, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Senator. And Mr. Khalif. Members, let's just go to Senate File 4399. Senator Abler, you want to? And then me and Senator Mann, you going to do this? You can give it back to him. That's fine. That's good. Let's do Senate, the 4399. We're going to have senators. We're going to have Liam talk us through what we all had agreement on the last time when we did the policy markup. Does that sound right to you, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Hoffman. Liam, welcome. Mr. Monahan.
Mr. Chair, members, you should have the A23 in your packets. I think you also have a revised index to the bill where I've gone through and put a strike through the sections that will be removed by this amendment. So the amendment is removing the cost provisions, or at least those we know about today. And it's doing a couple other things that I'll point out as we go along. So on page 1, lines 2 through 9, those are removing the language that was inserted in the A12 amendment. That was Senate File 4955. Page 1, line 10, is removing the language that was added by the A19 amendment. That was a modified version of Senate File 4268. Line 11 is a clarifying change to the language having to do with the licensing of assisted living directors. Page 1, lines 12, 13, 15, 16, and 17 are all removing the language that was added by the A17. This was the language about qualified professionals in Chapter 245G and changes to the treatment coordination qualifications. That language was, there was no bill with that language in it previously. So in the middle of those lines is line 14. That's removing the two additional accrediting bodies that would be permitted to do some licensing work on behalf of the Department of Human Services related to substance use disorder treatment facilities. So jumping down then to page 1, line 18 through page 3, line 2, is adding language to the bill from Senate File 3984 that Mr. Raymond and I thought at the time had a cost, but in fact didn't have a cost. So in order to keep those provisions with the others from Senate File 3984, Senator Hoffman is adding those back into the bill. Call that staff error, I guess. And then on page 3, line 3 through to the end, it looks like new language, but it's not. You may recall that the Senate and the House passed and the governor signed the Direct Care and Treatment Recodification Bill. Well, since that language is now the law, we need to conform the changes that were contained in Senator Hoffman's bill to the new law, and that's what these sections are doing.
Thank you, Mr. Monahan. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also for tomorrow as well, there were some provisions, and I'm sorry, Mr. Monahan, if I wasn't talking, bringing that up, but there are some provisions in our bill that we are going to actually move. Are we going to do that tomorrow? We're going to move those provisions to Senator Wicklund because she wanted to keep this. There's some sunset language and there were some things we are sunsetting all, but she's going to keep that. Can you explain that? So I know I did it wrong, but that's okay.
Mr. Monahan.
Mr. Chair, members, yes. You're referring to the language that came from the revisor's office related to reports that have ostensibly expired, that bill was heard here, and then it was referred to Senator Wicklund's committee. Senator Hoffman incorporated the entirety of the bill into his underlying bill, but in the meantime, the bill was heard in Senator Wicklund's committee, and she removed some provisions from the bill because she didn't want them to expire. So you're also going to have an amendment tomorrow on the floor to conform your bill to the changes made in Senator Wicklund's committee.
Thank you, Mr. Monahan. Senator Hoffman. Oh, sorry. Senator Abler, you had a question?
Oh. No, and I appreciate the walkthrough for this amendment for tomorrow for the floor, right? He wasn't walking, so there wasn't a swagger, Mr. Chair. Mr. Monahan was discussing the changes on line 3.6 and following due to its interaction with the recodification. He is now the first person to amend the recodified language, which is, an honor that no one else should have been able to enjoy than him. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Abler. And congratulations, Mr. Monahan.
Another first, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
To that point, how many years did it take Senator Abler, you were chair, and it was to align those corn cans? Oh. Under the DWRS language, you've now recodified, amended the recodification. I like
a lot of bragging rights, Mr. Chair, for our amazing staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Monahan. Mr. Chair, I don't know,
any further questions, comments from members? Any final words, Senator Hoffman?
No, just to remember, we all agreed, and so we let our staff do the due diligence here, and there's just one other one that is left there, I think, members, to note that, the Article 4 piece of it we might have an amendment to an amendment tomorrow. Just thought I'd let you know that. So
thank you so much, Senator Hoffman. And I was just told that there's no action needed. It's already on for being on the floor. So
correct.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. With that, we'll move on to Senate File 4043.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator Hoffman, you have 1 minute.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
God, I love it. Can you give the gavel down to Senator Utke now? No, I'm kidding. Under the current PCA amendment, and Damon, all right, Damon is here online. This is good. Nice to see you, Damon. Damon Leivestad, mechanical engineer who lived experience is going to talk us through what this bill is about. But under the current PCA system, Mr. Chair and members, there are clients who need a significant number of PCA hours per day are at a disadvantage when trying to find workers. Then due to the workforce shortage and the inability to schedule workers more than 24 hours a shift, clients are forced to restrict their life, safety, and travel. One of the biggest barriers preventing clients from using PCA hours is the way they chose are the PCA restrictions related to overnight and sleeping shifts. DHS already offers the night supervision services for waivered services, but we don't do that under the traditional PCA services. It's already difficult to find home care workers, right? And as we know, to work awake overnight shifts is even harder. The restrictions that we have in the state make it harder, and that leaves folks with few options at night. When you look at clients with a 16 to 24 hour PCA care that's typically use overnight respiratory devices and can't roll on their own, so it would be common for the worker to be woken up every 2 to 3 hours to help their client. A few common sense clarifications and changes in law would help. And if a client can offer sleep overnight shifts, it would give them flexibility and access to more potential caregivers. Members, some home care workers want to work one long shift every week or weekend when they don't have any other comments, which would be a flexible benefit that would draw people to the home care industry. Because of the PCA restrictions that we have, the clients are then very restricted in their ability to travel because it's nearly impossible to find and fairly pay a worker to accompany an individual on an overnight trip. So here's what There should be a delete all, which I'll go through. I'm going through it right now. There's an A1 amendment in front of you. I might as well just tell you what it is. It directs DHS to draft legislation that will fix those issues that I just highlighted, and Damon will explain those to you better than I can. And that should allow up to 8 hours of overtime PCA hours per week per worker beyond the current maximum numbers of reimbursable hours per month for those situations. Asleep or awake PCA staffing overnight in the same manner as direct support professionals under the disability waiver. PCA services are to be provided in shifts up to 80 consecutive hours when otherwise compliant with federal and state labor laws. That's the little dance with the feds on that one. Allowing overtime would enable current home care workers to provide extra care during this ongoing worker shortage. And so Damon Leibstadt is here, Mr. Chair, but before that, I want to move the A1 amendment.
Senator Hoffman moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Damon is on. And
Mr. Leibstadt, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
First, I'd like to thank Chair Hoffman and the other committee members for allowing me to speak here today. My name is Damon Leibstadt. I'm a 50-year-old disability advocate and mechanical engineer from Plymouth, Minnesota, where I live with my parents, David and Deanna. I was born with a progressive neurological disorder called spinal muscular atrophy, and I've been using a wheelchair full-time since I was 10 years old. Traveling with a disability is difficult under normal conditions, but without caregivers, it's obviously impossible. That's the situation I was in about 6 months ago, when my nephew Jason was being sworn into the South Dakota Air National Guard by my brother, retired Lieutenant Colonel Eric Leibstadt of the Air Force. To go, I would have had to leave Friday morning and would have been gone until Sunday evening, roughly 57 hours. Those hours would have been split between 2 weeks, so no overtime rules would have been broken. However, without the ability to bill sleep overnights or shifts over 24 hours, I could not attend. Ironically, my parents are in Texas this week for Jason's graduation from basic training. And again, I'm here in Plymouth. Long sleep overnights and shifts over 24 hours, which both the U.S. Department of Labor and the Minnesota Labor and Industrial Department allow for, to give home care clients flexibility to live full and good lives in the chosen communities in accordance with the Homestead Act. So I ask you please to consider supporting Senate File 4043. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Mr. Leibstadt. Are there any questions or comments from members?
He wrote this.
Seeing none. Senator Hoffman. Oh, Senator Abler.
Senator Hoffman, this is going to take a lot of work for somebody at that place. After they have the meeting about deciding how to set up the copies, you know, for showing the work, is this going to be like at the same time or sequential so the same people can work on it, do you think? Or
you get him under control.
I'm feeling so sensitive toward, you know, what they have to do there and you know, so. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm glad you're aware of it.
And Mr. Chair, Damon wrote these. I mean, you talk about somebody with lived experience saying, all right, he's a mechanical engineer. The guy, you know, and he's sitting there, how do I make my life as, you know, typical as anybody else's, right? And it's just like, I mean, so these are real lived experiences, these are real issues. This is what we're about. This gets to the why we do what we do. I mean, I could get Rick Varco, I could get, a couple of other folks to come up here and talk about, but I think it's just important that, you know, what we're doing is what we're doing. There's going to be a fiscal note. I don't know. Has that been released to us yet, Mr. Raymond? Yeah, yeah. It's Senator, yes, I'm here. Senator, you want to ask the question? We already have you embedded in our, right? Members, it's just like if somebody doesn't ask the question, Senator Utke, right? We know that, but I think just think it's let's keep working on this because these are real life issues and they're being presented to us and this is real life stuff. So does that make sense?
Senator, Mr. Livingston, go ahead.
Can I make a comment? For the sleep overnights and the shifts over 24 hours, those are hours that somebody already has. So there's no cost to that. It's all just.
There should be no cost.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep.
There should be no. And Sean Burke said the same thing. You know, Sean Burke from who used to be a disability law center, he's like, there's no. So I think Damon's right on this. Good. So it'd be interesting to see. There's a bunch of us who believe that there should be no cost to this. So because it's the same amount of hours, Senator Utke, to your point. So
the overtime would be.
Yeah, the overtime would be the only one, right, Damon? Yeah.
Senator Abler.
Well, Mr. Chair, Damon, I was just trying to make a joke about the other thing we were talking about with everything costs money just to have them write one piece of paper sometimes. But Senator Hoffman, you brought me back to earth on the merit of this whole thing. This committee on a bipartisan basis has decided that everybody who needs care should get it. And you know, that if you need more than 10 hours a day, this committee has been all about trying to find staff. We've been trying to give bonuses for excess, and we've succeeded. You know, Mr. Chair, we've actually, there's a, I think 7.5% or something bump on people that need 10 hours or more, and it's really nice to meet your friend there, Senator Hoffman, who came to us on the Zoom here. It's just really, really important, and so I just had to get myself back in the right space and respect the topic because this is life and death for these individuals, and if we can't serve these people, who on earth can we serve? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Abler. Thank you, Damon. I'd like to see the as amended get laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So,
the bill is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. The final bill is Senate File 4045.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And Senate File 4045 is really as we look at, and I'm sorry, I just lost my notes on. I mean, it really gets this, Senator Abler, to that point, this really gets, when we started off this conversation, it's about why we do what we do. I mean, this really gets to it, right? Let's find a way to get to the why. But there's an A2 amendment. It's my author's amendment. It just clarifies that wages include wage-related costs and lists those specific items that count as a wage. So that clarifying language was developed with input from the PCA provider organizations to make sure the bill closes a loophole that doesn't have any unintended consequences. So with that, I move the A2 amendment.
Senator Hoffman moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. And Mr. Leifstad is here as well again, but I just want to just go briefly on this bill builds on the previous bill, and this enhances the PCA rates for workers to help staff with the most difficult shifts that PCA clients fill, right? The PCA programs work because they're flexible, right? They're flexible to meet the needs of people, whether it be, but wages were not high enough to entice workers. There are often big gaps in a weekly schedule for a client, and these gaps are most notably on the weekends. Currently, it's extremely difficult to find staff for weekend shifts, which can place clients in potentially dangerous situations. And I'm going to pause there for a second. We know, Senator Abler, the story of Jimmy Wheels, when he would take his medications on a Thursday, not knowing if he would have them lined up for him, not knowing if anybody was going to be there on the week. I'd never forget that, right? And nobody came to visit him all weekend. And I remember that was in your committee one time. And so I just pause there to say that just highlights another thing that because of the finally difficult for people to do those weekend shifts. And it's also hard to draw in skilled home care workers or incentivize workers to take the work for clients that are highly labor intensive needs. So there's four things that this bill does, members. It creates a higher weekend rate It's going to cost, but just bear with me on this one, Senator Edke. It's going to create a higher weekend rate to help clients fill those open shifts and creates a safer, more stable environment on the physical and well-being. It also ensures to enhance rate goes to 110% of the rate on top of any of the other enhancements, and that must be paid for services from 8 p.m. Friday until 8 a.m. on Monday. There's an enhanced rate tier system, and that's built out at 7.5, 12.5, and 17.5, and that's to really compensate the workers who work. And then with clients with labor-intensive needs, home care workers for these clients provide more labor-intensive work than those who work in the clients that have less severe disabilities. The enhanced rate for those clients would ensure the complex needs that are there, and they can find adequate care to continue to live and work in their communities. The key, work in their communities, live in their communities, right? That applies a 25% per hour bonus for workers certified or licensed as an RN, LPN, HHA, or CAN. This would help incentivize workers with these credentials to enter the home care field. It would also create an incentive for current PCAs to get additional training, and together that's trying to build that pipeline for highly skilled and trained PCAs into the workforce. Finally, the fourth reason why is it corrects a loophole that the current enhanced rate wording that would currently allow the providers to divert wages into the company-based benefits that would subvert the purpose of that enhanced rate. So there's that balancing piece of it, because current language allows the enhanced rate to apply to wages and benefits, but this does not provide enough clarity or protection to ensure that workers get the full amount of their wages. So there's a one-pager in your handout, members, and then Damon is with us again to talk about that, and then that one-pager is also in your piece. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you, Senator Hoffman. Damon, welcome back.
Okay. Still Damon? And I'm still disabled, so I'll get the rest of the introduction. The shortage of home care workers has a tremendous impact on everyone who relies on home care services. For individuals with complex needs, however, finding adequate care, which allows us to continue to work and live in our communities, has become almost impossible. Home care workers who work with clients with complex needs require additional training dependent on the client for such things as ventilators, BiPAP, cough assist, suction machines, T-tubes, catheters, nebulizers, electric wheelchairs, and Hoyer lifts, to name just a few. Additionally, they provide much more labor-intensive work in those who work with clients with less severe disability. I've personally had 2 or 3 potential caregivers in the last year who have turned down jobs for me because it was too physically demanding. A tiered enhanced rate system and higher wages for workers certified as RN, LPN, HHA, or CNAs, which provide a pipeline for highly skilled workforce PCS. Additionally, finding help on weekends is extremely difficult. My 4-week repeating schedule, I have about 4 Friday nights, 4 Saturday mornings, 2 Sunday nights, 3 Sunday mornings, and no Sunday nights, and no help Friday, Saturday, or Sunday afternoon or evening. This means that between 1 p.m. Friday afternoon to 9 a.m. Monday morning, my retired 80-year-old dad and 76 the old mom work on average 44 and a half of the 68 hours every week. Obviously, as my parents, they'll do whatever they need to and serve my chairs or not. Unfortunately, lifting and dressing me has become very challenging for them and impossible for either of them to do individually. Finding home care workers is critical for their well-being and safety, as well as mine. I'd like to ask you to support Senate File 4045. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Mr. Damon. Are there any questions or comments from members? Senator Abler.
Well, it's just a very similar discussion to before. And Damon, I saw your little update here. This is really a nice piece of work, which you wrote up, and I appreciate reading about you. And the committee agrees with you, and we're behind you in every way we can help make this work better to support you and many others like you. On a bipartisan basis, the Senate is all in. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Senator Abler. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, I think as we're waiting on the full fiscal note piece of it, I think there's one section, if you look at the loophole and the enhanced rate wording, that should be a zero cost. And, you know, we can maybe amend that language. Maybe somebody can get us that. We can do it on the floor, add that to our policy bill on the floor. I don't know, members.
I'd be happy to offer.
Senator Abler.
I'd be happy to offer it if staff can get it squared away, and if we're, you know, you always have your omnibus, but it'd be nice to get that just done.
Yeah. Sean Burke mentioned that to me, Mr. Chair and Senators, that Sean Burke just mentioned to me that in the process that should have a zero cost. So let's get confirmation on that and then add it. And then you're correct. Let's might as well do something like that. So
yeah. So maybe Mr. Monahan, or is that his department, probably to figure that out. So is that right? So can I request you work on that and then just get it when you? It's going to be perfectly written. So just when you get it written to your satisfaction, send it down to the floor.
Thank you, Senator Abler.
Do you need technical assistance from the person from DHS with the checkbook? I mean, to make sure that is a zero in that process. We can get some technical assistance from them too on that.
Senator Hoffman, before it's laid over, any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair and members, thank you. And Damon, thank you for your hard work on this. You know, a mechanical engineer who actually understands health and human services is beyond. I appreciate talking to you about this and you having the patience, because I didn't understand half of what you were talking about when we first met. You remember that? And I appreciate you hanging with me on that and getting the right language to us and creating these bills. And now we got some conversation, and I appreciate that. Appreciate you, Damon. Thank you very much, members. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. And with that, Senate File 4045, as amended, is now laid over. And with no further business, we are now adjourned.